Well, good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for April 6th, 2014. Koyo Kubota here. So very glad you joined us. You know, just a word about the weather. Right around now is a time when spring is really, turning the corner on spring, especially for places that have a real cold winter. I know that people from the Midwest and Chicago, where we used to live, so we have, when we think about it, we remember what it was like, and so when friends, you know, mention the weather, we say, yeah, that's right, that's right. And spring comes in like a lion, you know, and hopefully goes out like a lamb. But early March is still very raw. And I remember just recently writing a email back to someone saying, yeah, because he was talking about the weather, and I said, you know, we don't like to get our expectations up, and usually we just, after a while, we get experience, and we say, well, I'm not going to expect any warm weather until May, you know. Don't get fooled by a teaser, and it's a truism that there's always one more storm or one more cold wave coming in than after you thought you turned a corner. And but sooner or later, you really do turn the corner. But our perceptions play havoc, you know, with our expectations. And it made me recall an interesting, I guess it was based upon some psychological research. But what they found was that a person's perception of what the weather typically is like in their region depends upon when they're asked, what the current conditions are when they're asked. So if it happens to be a pretty nice day, then on average the response would be more favorable. Hey, our climate's okay. But if they're asked on a day when it's particularly stormy, then it colors their whole response, and they say, yeah, the usual weather around here is pretty bad. And so the conclusion of this research was that if you're trying to get a read on what how people view anything, or in this case, the weather, you have to factor in the fact that their report is unconsciously biased by their current situation. And this is, I suppose, it's sort of like if you ask somebody for a favor when they're kind of irritable, not with you, but just in general, you're probably not as likely to get an affirmative response. So what is right now is important, and it colors everything. That's why you shouldn't make a decision on big things when you're particularly, you know, down about something. And I said, well, get a good night's sleep, you make the decision in the morning, and so forth. So it's interesting to use this kind of a observation of human nature and see how it can, you can utilize it, one, how a person can utilize it in not only everyday life, but in their spiritual endeavors and so forth. So interesting. I'll have to give that some more thought and elaborate on that. Well, today, we're honored to have as our guest to give us a Dharma glimpse, Wendy Xinyo, who was part of our LM2, Lay Minister 2 group, and her home is in upstate New York. And I had just talked to her just before the program came on, and she was saying, oh, it's 60 today. And so hopefully I put my wishes in that they've turned the corner. So for today's Dharma Glimpse, Wendy Xinyo.
Thank you, Reverend Coyle. it is on this day that, they promised it might be 60. We're going to take a run at it, but, some forecasts say like 53, but after the winter we've had, that I think those in the Midwest would join us in this feeling, sort of endless winter. And I remember talking to a lot of people this winter, it's like, we used to have terrible winters when we were young, and it was like nobody ever remembered that. They only remembered like the last two winters, and so this like just seemed like the worst that could ever happen. But I think if you take the long view, it probably we've lived through worse, but it sure didn't seem like that while we were experiencing it. Well, actually, it's funny you talking about weather and spiritual practice. Living in Rochester. It's the home of the Zen Center of Rochester, which was founded by Philip Keplo, Roshi Keplo. And when asked why he established the Zen Center in Rochester back at the time when, Zen was just sort of making its entry into American life, he said, because the weather is so miserable in Rochester that the people wouldn't have anything better to do than meditate. So I've always loved that story, and I think that accurately reflects how many of us feel about Rochester weather. But on to my Dharma Glimpse. I'm calling this Hunting the Great Awakened Elephant. And it's because of the treacherousness of the spiritual path. Dedication to a spiritual path is a treacherous activity. It may seem like an enlightened activity, but it's treacherous if you are keeping in mind that you are constantly doing battle with your bamboo or ignorant nature. And dedication to a path as a Dharma teacher, I think, is ever more treacherous. The innate hazards of attaching to our egos and our self-power as our refuge is ever present and proportionate to our desire to attend whatever end we have our sights on. Whatever that end may be, it might be dedicated practitioner or teacher or enlightenment or rebirth in the Pure Land or whatever, and those sort of end goals sort of change as we go along on our path. But one thing I've been reflecting on recently, and I think it's because the past 2 months I've been involved in two activities for Bright Dawn. One was researching and writing an article about Reverend Gyomei Kobose, Reverend Koyo Kobose, and the Bright Dawn Center of Oneness Buddhism, which was recently published, by the way, in the Amida Order Journal, Running Tide. And the other was facilitating a sutra study module for the Lay Ministry 6 class of 2014, who will be inducted in just a little bit, in a few weeks. And this class was focused on the Tambutsu Ge and the Heart Sutra translations and commentaries by Reverend Gyomei Kobose. So it's like in the last part of this endless winter, I was immersed in the spiritual and philosophical and teaching history of our Bright Dawn lineage. I was rereading teachings, exploring lineage teachers, listening to Dharma talks, mostly for our writing the article, but also for getting ready to help facilitate that class. And well, being totally immersed like that, something wonderful happened. I know Reverend Koyo Kobose saying is the Dharma is my rock. But what I have recently experienced is much more of a feeling of floating. Immersed in our teachings, I found myself suddenly more buoyant in life, in all aspects of my life. Not like a rock anchoring me, but sort of like a ability to float, sort of not drowning in the details of life, but a floating above them all. I felt like and this is going to sound sort of dramatic, but it is really true. I felt like I had become one with me for the first time in many years. Like I was naturally me. I began enjoying every part of my life. I was floating through work, through stress, through chores, even through the endless snow shoveling and cold of this long, endless winter of our discontent. You know, I wasn't worried about what I should be doing, how I should be acting. It's just living my life. I wasn't grasping at all the shoulds. I was just being myself with my friends, my family, my coworkers and clients, but always feeling more authentically myself, connected to a natural flow in everything I did, feeling perfectly at ease. Everything seemed so free and so natural. And this reminded me of a Dharma song that first captivated me some 25 years ago when I was studying and practicing in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. It's a poem called Vajra Song, called Free and Easy, a spontaneous Vajra song by the Venerable Lama Gendun Rinpoche. I will recite it to you now. Happiness cannot be found through great effort and willpower, but is already present in open relaxation and letting go. Don't strain yourself. There is nothing to do or undo. Whatever momentarily arises in the body-mind has no real importance at all, has little reality whatsoever. So why identify with it and become attached to it, passing judgment on it and ourselves? Far better to simply let the entire game happen on its own, springing up and falling back like waves, without changing or manipulating anything. And notice how everything vanishes and reappears magically, again and again, time without end. Only our searching for happiness prevents us from seeing it. It's like a vivid rainbow which you pursue without ever catching, or a dog chasing its own tail. Although peace and happiness does not exist as an actual thing or place, it's always available and accompanies you every instant. Don't believe in the reality of good and bad experiences. They are like today's ephemeral weather, like rainbows in the sky. Wanting to grasp the ungraspable, you exhaust yourself in vain. As soon as you open and relax this tight fist of grasping, infinite space is there, open, inviting, comfortable. Make use of this spaciousness, this freedom and natural ease. Don't search any further, looking for the great awakened elephant who is already resting quietly at home in front of your own hearth. Nothing to do or undo, nothing to force, nothing to want, and nothing missing. Emaho, marvelous. Everything happens by itself. So there it was, a profound and beautiful Dharma song that I didn't really hear 25 years ago. And it was only in my rediscovery of the riches and power of our Bright Dawn lineage teachers and teachings that I felt this freedom and natural ease again. You know, one of the books I have been rereading in the essay collection by Dr. Alfred Bloom Sensei in the book Living in Amida's Universal Vow, this is one of the things I was sort of looking at and studying our lineage teachers. And when I was rereading that book, I kept coming back to the very first essay by the great reformer who was in our Bright Dawn Center lineage, Kiyozawa Manchi. The Great Path of Absolute Other Power and My Faith was the title of the essay. And in this essay, he talks about his quest to find the meaning of life at all costs. It is this quest that brought him to a profound belief in the Tathagata. He describes something I believe many of us can relate to because we have struggled with the same thing. I know I certainly have. He talks about the journey he took to his faith and his belief that self-power is absolutely useless. He said it had been a trying process, and he could only reach that conclusion of the uselessness of self-power when he exhausted the entire resources of his knowledge and devices. And we are full of devices. he would reach conclusion after conclusion of what the meaning was, and then each one would be invariably undermined. And this is how he put it. He said, one can never escape this calamity so long as one is hopeful of establishing religious faith by way of logic or learning. My recent Bright Dawn immersion experience has brought me to that place Sensei hinted at, the place where all your previous conclusions about the meaning of life are undermined. They are undermined because they were formed based on logic and learning alone. I can't tell you how many times during my life as a spiritual seeker I've reached that place where I look back and laugh out of frustration. Laugh because I see I've been traveling for miles and miles, months and months, years and years, heading in the wrong direction. So now what? Now what do I have to learn to get myself oriented and walking in the right direction toward enlightenment or whatever it is I'm seeking? Each time I reach that place, I come closer and closer to the discovery that it's not what I have to learn or acquire, but what I must unlearn and give up. But to be a student, one must learn, right? And therein lies the rub. That is the treacherous territory of being a student of Buddhism or any true spirituality or religion, and also the heightened danger of being a teacher on that same path. It was Shinran who realized in his own life that the path is not so much about enlightenment or being reborn in the Pure Land, but about the awakening of faith and a naturalness, or Amida's sincerity. This awakening of faith is described by Kaneko Dai, a student of Manchi Sensei, in his essay, The Meaning of Salvation in the Doctrine of Pure Land Buddhism, which is also in the book Living in Amida's Universal Vow. He describes it as, quote, breaking through at the root of delusion. When that happens, he writes, we are broken. Our self-complacency and our faith in self-power, logic, and concepts is shaken. He says we are emptied through and through, yet at the same moment we found ourselves taken in by Amida's sincerity. I love that term, Amida's sincerity. And for the first time attain true restfulness because our deepest root of our existential anxiety or suffering, namely ignorance, is cut through forever. Of course, this doesn't mean that we won't experience suffering as long as we remain in this world, but, as he says, they no longer disturb our fundamental restlessness and serenity. So all this that I read circles back to what Reverend Gyomei Kobosi has taught us in so many of his writings, in the essays in Everyday Suchness and the Center Within. Reread for yourself the essays on naturalness, living life, life without regret, Buddhism in everyday life, simplicity, the natural way, gateless gate, and transcending means and ends, just to name a few. Yes, I have been a student of these teachings for years. They were constantly whispering in my ear. But I was still trying to be a student, trying to be a teacher, hunting that elusive self, or lack of self I thought I needed to find, and trying to go wherever I thought I needed to go to find it. I was listening, but I wasn't hearing. I wasn't actually living my life. I was doing what I thought I should to reach the goal of what? Hunting the great awakened elephant who was lying in my own home at my hearth. Running away from myself, looking beyond my own life to find it. I hadn't emptied myself through and through. No, instead I had been loading myself up with elephant hunting gear and elephant hunting instructions and books. I was collecting that gear from every teacher, and it was weighing me down until I was lost and spinning, not knowing what direction I was heading. Had I listened deeply, not mouthing the words to be a model student or to give the right teachings, but listened in me, for me, I would have heard. I would have heard that enlightenment is every day, as Reverend Gyomei talks of, and that acceptance is transcendence, and that ends equals means, and that only in emptying myself, releasing me from the tight grasp of me, that I could truly live as me. Had I truly listened, I would have heard Reverend Guillaume Kobosi saying to me, quote, only when one lives his life does he know its meaning. I would have heard him say, quote, whatever the true inner heart says is the right way, listen to its voice. I would have heard him say, the true way is simply the natural way. I would have heard him say that true self is selflessness, the teaching of forget yourself. And I would have heard the voice of Reverend Akagarasu, Reverend Gilme's teacher, as Shuichi Mida wrote it, heard by me. He wrote, Reverend Akagarasu is always whispering in my ear. He whispers, there is nothing to worry about. You had better do whatever you want to do. This is the Buddha Dharma I heard from him. So this is a dedication with deep gassho of respect to our precious teachers. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. As I listen, I kind of open myself and receive associations that are triggered by what the speaker is saying. And I found that through my experience in hosting Live Dharma Sunday, that I do not have to really prepare much. And by listening to the Dharma Glimpse, completely listening to the Dharma Glimpse, my karmic past, things are pulled out. And I don't have to worry about what I'm going to say. Even though this perhaps this is not the best way to prepare, and maybe it's not organized, it's more a potpourri kind of a thing, but that's okay. That's okay. Maybe there is, since all the teachings are related, maybe there is a thread, or maybe the listener has his job is to find the thread. But here are some of the things that will pull out of me or triggered. The word true and trusting, as a description of Shinjin, which I guess is sort of the counterpart to enlightenment in other denominations. But for Jodo Shin Buddhists, sort of the ultimate in spiritual growth and realization is called Shinjin. Sometimes called acquiring faith, although faith is a very problematic word, carries a lot of baggage with it. And so some of the Shin teachers have used the phrase true and trusting, and trusting, giving things over to other power, to the natural flow of life. I know that Tai Tetsu Uno, in one of his books, when talking about true and trusting, he was reminded of it when he saw a bird flying in the sky. A bird just so free, so natural, just no encumbrances. That kind of a life, I guess. And I remember one of my teachers, Kobori Nande Roshi, when I was having a conversation with him and we were talking about things, and he you're talking about both Zen and Shin, and in talking about Shingen, Kobori Sensei said, Satori, which is more associated as a Zen term for enlightenment, says Satori is like, and he kind of demonstrated by pretending to hold a sword, a samurai sword, and making a cut in the air. He says Satori is like, is that, like this cut, like if there's a bamboo here, you know, and you make that cut. Satori is like that insightful, is that experience of flash. Okay? And then when you look at the what you cut, and you look at the cross-section of the bamboo, he said, you'll see Shingen. Sort of like one is the cut, the experience of that cut, and then Shingen is the content, okay, of that enlightenment, aha, experience. I had to think of more about how to elaborate on that, but, you know. And then another thing that I thought about was Reverend Akegarasu has a short article in the Shadow Buddha, an essay called Life of Incidents. And in this article, he talks about most of our time, we think that our life and our job in life is to handle incidents. How to handle this kind of situation, that kind of situation. And even, of course, in the secular sense, so we have a lot of goals, we have a lot of ends that we want to, and we look for the best means to reach those ends. And for most people, this is life. I said, well, got to get an education. I got to get a job. I got to find the right partner. I've got to. It's very purposive, goal-oriented. Okay, and then a lot of it is dealing with. Well, when you say incidents, it means something came up that we cannot ignore. Okay, something happens. It's not just our hopes and dreams, but handling. Well, you might say our struggles, obstacles, okay, incidents, things that have happened, we got to deal with them. And we're concerned about dealing with them in the right kind of way, the most efficient way. Or we might say, hey, why is this, these things happened to me? I had this accident, or so, I had this domestic situation, and all of these. Well, you want to put them crises, okay, all the way from pet peeves, small irritations, all the way up to big things. Then, in the article, Reverend Akagadasu says, but you know, life is not an incident. Beyond the life of incidents, how do you deal with life itself? That was a line that stood out for me. How do you deal with life itself? Okay. A lot of us get very skilled at handling incidents, and we feel that, you know, that's it. She's making the point of something more than that. And I think it's when we tap into that life beyond incidents is what was being expressed in the Dharma Glimpse. Something where we go beyond whether the joys and sorrows. Instead of trying to maximize our joys and minimize our sorrows, isn't that the whole meaning of life? Hey. Or, as I remember, one of my favorite quotes, person gave it once when I was in a interfaith retreat. That happened to be the setting, but and it's a humorous way of putting things. But his take on sort of what we're talking about is, he said, his favorite quote that he shared was, "Don't forget what's truly important just because you have to deal with the merely urgent." I really like that, and anything that has a little humorous twist, I guess, I really appreciate it. But it's making an important point. And we do get caught up in dealing with the merely urgent. Well, a lot of we have responsibilities, we got your family, we got practical things. And then it's not always easy to say, well, what's truly important? But what that quote is talking about is that the things that we thought, we confuse the urgent with the important. Truly important. The urgent things are important, but the truly important, which I think is the life beyond the life of incidents, is going to true and trusting. It's going to where, like a bird flying, that kind of, which embodies naturalness, freedom, nothing to prove. And even in that, using these kind of adjectives, one's life is filled with joys and sorrows, dealing with incidents. Yet, you could talk about it in a lot of words. Having a center, or a spiritual foundation, or a center of gravity, and it really doesn't have anything to do with the joys and sorrows, with the life of incidents. So much of what determines whether we're happy or not is how we're seen by others. You know, man is a social animal, and it's a very difficult thing if his reputation or his, you know, self-definition, self-esteem, so much, nobody is immune to those things. And yet one has to struggle with realizing the content of the Shinjin, or the true and trusting, or the life beyond life of incidents, or what's truly important, one's spiritual base, I guess. Reverend Akegarasu, being a great teacher, he gives instances where that show that his life was not very smooth necessarily. And it goes without saying that the greater you are as a man, as a person, as a, you know, great person, there's going to be a lot of people that's not going to like you. Or whether, you know, you could call it jealousy, or sincere jealousy in the sense of, hey, you know, I don't agree with that person. He's doing an injustice to Buddhism, or he's doing this, or he's on an ego trip, or he's this or that. Okay. And these people, you know, they don't necessarily have an axe to grind. they feel they're sincere and that they're talking, you know, from their self and so forth. And one instance was when some of his contemporaries, Reverend Akegatos, used the term in Japanese called karabin. Karabin means empty bottle. Yeah, Akegatos, yeah, he's a karabin. He's just an empty bottle. And this essay that Reverend Akegatos was expressing this, he said, yeah, I'm talking about being a karabin. He says, yeah, that's a good term. And he goes on to talk about, you know, how he's relating to himself, his self-image, as a karabin, empty bottle. Rather than the usual human tendency of when you get criticized, you want to be defensive or you want to counterattack or and things like this. Well, you know, we become skillful not only in dealing with life's incidents, but we become skillful in defending ourselves, taking care of ourselves, watching out for number one. And all of these things could be considered our tools, our equipment. We had a guest minister in one of our courses, and I had heard him say this statement before, and he said it again, something that sometimes I forget. He said, all the Dharma is all skillful means. All of Dharma, all of the teachings, you know, are upaya, skillful means. Meaning that when we talk about Dharma and as a teaching, as truth, but it's better to see it for what it really is, as a skillful means that teachers are expressing. We cannot express the unexpressible. And the point here would be, even spirituality, I talk about the spiritual toolbox, or, hey, here's some good spiritual tools. Okay? And sometimes maybe we might cling to these tools too much. I mean, if you're a carpenter, you got some tools, man, those tools are precious. You cannot do your work without these tools. And so spirituality might say, hey, you know, how can you let go of everything? Don't you want to hold on to suchness, naturalness, oneness? I have a son that goes hiking a lot. I wish I had done more trekking when I was younger. I didn't realize, hey, you know, you have a real sense of that kind of pushing oneself and it's going to be too late later. Okay. But of course, there are other kinds of trekking. But talking about real mountain climbing, going backpacking, roughing it, this kind of thing, as a part of, as a avenue, as a gate for learning about oneself, for learning about life, can be done in the outdoors. And he has traveled on to into Tibet and gone on the spiritual well-known spiritual treks that people all around the world have gone to, and you know, it's a well-established trek. And next month he's going to go to Machu Picchu in Peru. And it's not. This is not like, you know, tourism. You know, this is going trekking and carrying all your stuff. And this reminds me of a Dharma talk I gave once about, you know, if we're climbing one's mountain and using the mountain as a metaphor for one's spiritual journey. And we think we need a lot of gear. Well, don't you need, you know, you need this, you need your compass, you need it. And we're really got this 80-pound pack on our backs, and we're proud of ourselves whether we're making this journey, you know. And this is another way of handling things as sort of like an incident and purposefulness and finding meaning like this and that way. And it's scary and yet freeing when we, a lot of times we don't realize this until we got too much in our backpack. That's when we then say, you know, because we're holding on to these things, and we need this, And it's sort of like, as you're going up this mountain, there's more opportunities for the outfitter stores and different people you're meeting to say, hey, I found this useful. And so you, whoa, I'm going by. I've been talking a lot. Let go of all this gear. It's scary but freeing. Scary but freeing. That's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, keep going. And you have a very beautiful, wonderful day. Thank you.